Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Lots going on in the market, as is always the case, you know, and the only thing that will be the same is it will be different. Again, prior performance is not necessarily indicative of future results. It can and will vary. And because of that, we like to grab experts to help us understand what's going on, get different perspectives, which is always helpful, and a returning guest for you, Sean Hyman, trader and editor of Ultimate Wealth Report. And Sean's been on the program before, offering his insights to us on some of the different things happening in the market, different investment and trading strategies. He's got a website, ultimatewealthreport.com, that you'll be sure to want to take a look at. Good stuff there. And it's been a couple of things in the news of late, one of which I said I have to have Sean come back and help us kind of dig into it. Sean has an extensive background in the financial markets, spending more than 20 years in the investing trenches. He's been a stockbroker over at Schwab. He's also been a trading course instructor for foreign exchange markets and also a financial writer for numerous outlets and speaker at conferences both nationally and internationally. He has a whole slew of licenses and also does trading on his own account. He's also accumulated a lot of tools to decipher and look at market trends. So we're going to take advantage of all of that expertise this morning, Sean, and appreciate you taking some time to be with us. Welcome.
Hey, good to be with you.
Glad to have you back. So I saw the headlines for Business Insider. There was a February 9th article. Hong Kong Bitcoin Exchange disappears, $254 million missing. And you know who I thought of? I thought of you, because I knew you'd be.
I didn't take the money.
Yeah, you didn't take the money. No, but I said, I got to get Sean on and help us. Tell me what in the world happened, because good grief, Charlie Brown. This is just a... I think this is the beginning of the end, but call me a skeptic.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, one, there was tours brought over from China to Hong Kong of about 3,000 local investors, and they were, you know, kind of wined and dined and brought through what was supposedly a Bitcoin exchange and showing their ATM network of Bitcoins and all this kind of stuff. And so they were asked to basically lay down money and given no document, no receipt. And they were promised that, hey, if you buy a $400,000 Hong Kong, based in Hong Kong dollars, Bitcoin contract, that in 4 months, hey, this thing's going to turn into $1 million for you as it produces, more Bitcoins, 90 Bitcoins on maturity. And, hey, if you'll even bring us extra people, there's certain prizes you could even get, such as a Mercedes-Benz and so forth. So they really laid this thing out very, in a very enticing way. And unfortunately, a lot of people bit, which the first flag should always be, if you see something that just seems like a too good to be true return, you should probably turn and run the other way. Also, if you have no receipt or documentation or proof of your money being deposited, that's another flag. I mean, they did have supposedly a trading account number, but that's about it. So long story short, people deposited their money, took the tours, and, months later or so, the exchange supposedly disappears, closes its doors, and money is shifted to who knows where. And so they're chalking it up as a possible, Ponzi scheme because, evidently one of the higher-ups at one point said, hey, you can get your money back if you bring in more people into this thing. So
nice.
It's ludicrous, unfortunately. But there's just more of these things that happen associated with Bitcoin because there's such a flashy allure to it. But there's been a lot of theft out of Bitcoin wallets. Of course, we know there's been another Bitcoin exchange that had to shut down because of a lot of theft there. And they still haven't gotten to the bottom of that. There could be some inside deals that happen there as well. They're not sure. So it's just really kind of shady.
Well, I think that's certainly a nice, simple way of looking at it. And I tell you what, I think you're right, Sean, about the allure and why that plays to the scamming. But I got to tell you, and again, I know I'm, and this may be just my being a little too skeptical, but. For me personally, when I do a financial talk, I've challenged people to explain to me how Bitcoin works, and because it's so convoluted and it's really anytime you've got something where you're selling, it just strikes to me, Sean, as you're selling air, and it's like this amorphous, nebulous cloud currency thing that just somebody might make the same argument. Well, David, that's the same thing that is, you know, with fiat currencies, and you know, it's only as good as the promise. That, you know, I get all that, but in this particular area with Bitcoin, I guess I'm just not surprised because it is just so non-tangible.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, I mean, if some people were told, "Hey, go to Bitcoin because it's going to be so much more sound than the U.S. dollar." But in a little over a year's time, Bitcoin has dropped from from almost $1,200 down to like $220, and so it shed right at $1,000 off of its price in a little over a year, and that's just enormous. And even as bad as the dollar is, and it is, and how it drops over long periods of time. I know we're getting a temporary rally now, but over long periods of time, it's dropped a lot. But you know, Bitcoin has dropped far faster than the dollar ever thought about dropping. And so I would much rather have dollars as opposed to Bitcoin if you held a gun to my head and made me choose one, you know, one of the two.
Right. Well, and, you know, on the back to the Bitcoin, and I do want to talk about the dollar. I'm glad you brought that up. But the Bitcoin, you know, good, you know, the fun logic would say it goes from $1,200 or whatever it was down to $200. Good grief. I mean, if you can't see that as a warning sign, then I mean, you're asking for it. And on that point, you know, the folks that, of course, that are promoting it, what are they going to say? They're going to say, hey, this is a buying opportunity, right?
Yep, absolutely. And it was just a bubble. I mean, anytime, one thing, I'm a big fundamentalist and big chartist, but I'll tell you one benefit to charting is if you can pull up a chart and that chart goes parabolic, meaning it just seems like it runs for the moon, and I don't care what the label is, what the asset is, that is a bubble, and that will pop. Now, it's hard to call the top on that, but it should be the first thing to tell you to start easing out of that if you're in it and get out of the way, because that thing is going to turn around and run right over you in due time. And so that was one thing that I was, you know, talking about Bitcoin on a lot of networks when it was around 1,200. I said, this is the craziest thing ever. It's in a bubble, and it's going to pop. And, of course, people thought I was idiots, or, you know, I was an idiot for saying that. And I told them all the reasons why. And they were laughing, but I mean, they're not laughing now when it's in the 200s. So it's just, you know, at best, Bitcoin might one day make it as a payment system, and I don't even know that I would ever trust it as that, me personally.
Right, but, I know,
but
I
it's
would.
Certainly not a, it's certainly not a currency, in my opinion. It might and make it as a payment system, but even that, I mean, honestly, there's a ton of things I'd use as a payment system right now, long before I'd ever consider Bitcoin.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen to that, Sean. You get no argument with me on that. I tell you what, I really am interested, and I know we've got a couple things you and I were going to talk about, but I'm real interested on your take on the dollar. But let's just do this. We'll grab a quick break, and we'll come back. Sean Hyman, ladies and gentlemen, trader and editor of Ultimate Wealth Report. Website, ultimatewealthreport.com. After this break, we'll talk with Sean.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
All right, we're back. Sean Hyman on the line, trader, editor of Ultimate Wealth Report, ultimatewealthreport.com. Good stuff there to take a look at and learn more about Sean's strategies. And you mentioned the dollar before the break, Sean, and I certainly would be interested in your perspective, because a lot of what's been happening, of course, with oil and with currencies and the ongoing struggles in Europe and Greece right now, which is kind of, I don't want to say entertaining because that would be callous, but it is extraordinary how Greece is negotiating from an incredibly weak position with the rest of Europe and the Eurozone or the Union. And, you know, all of that, I guess it's causing the dollar to be stronger because it's, you know, I guess at this point, the United States is the strongest of the weak.
Yeah, it's a lot of the dollar rally recently that's happened has been largely because of a weak euro and a weak European economy. But, of course, other countries have been undermining their currencies as well. Japan's been undermining the yen. You know, Sweden and Denmark have been going to negative interest rates to discourage money flows to their currency. So there's all these kind of tricks that central banks have played that are kind of pulling the rug out from under their currency. And so as they're doing that, you know, the dollar's been temporarily a safer place to hide out when they're talking about possibly raising interest rates over here. And I'm still not convinced they're going to do that soon with the dollar as high as they are. But just that rhetoric, that talk has caused it to run up. I do feel that we're probably in some of the latter stages of the recent dollar rally. It might have one more little leg up. Can't say that it won't. Some kind of blow off top. But after that, I do expect it to have quite a tumble. It's been very extended. And I think a lot of the turmoil that we've seen in Europe is already kind of baked into the cake, so to speak, meaning that every day it seems like bad news comes out about Europe, and it used to pummel the euro very badly. And these days, the very bad news does not seem to hardly budge the euro an inch. And when that starts to happen, when the bad news continues, but the asset still doesn't seem to correspond, you know, accordingly, then usually you're getting at or near a bottom in that asset. And so I think, you know, if the euro hasn't bottomed, it's probably not too terribly far from it for now, and that'll give the euro a reprieve, and the dollar will come down. Another reason why I'm bearish on the dollar is because we're starting to see all the metals pick back up, gold, silver, platinum, et cetera, and they're all, you know, traveling upward in the same direction overall together. And so as the metals, you know, strengthen overall, that's a bad sign for the U.S. dollar as well.
Well, I want to go back. I think that's all very helpful, Sean. I want to go, you know, just a little history lesson for our listeners, because it's easy to lose sight of where the dollar's been and what's been going on. You know, when we introduced the euro, and I don't remember the exact date. You might be able to tell me, but if I recall, it was in the 90s, early 90s?
Right.
Okay.
It was in the it was definitely in the 90s.
91, 92, 90s. Somewhere in there maybe. So with the introduction of when they first introduced it, it was on a one-to-one parity with the dollar.
Yeah, when it was introduced, it was high like that, and then it eventually it started a tremendous fall, I think down into the 60s, I believe it was, to the dollar, and then it started a recovery, which is, you know, it's never been that low again before. Back in 99 to 2001, that period, it got as low as 85, 90 cents, I believe, and that's about as low as it's been. So far, it's still been hitting, you know, higher highs and higher lows ever since it bottomed.
Well, and so, you know, now I guess the next logical question to ask or to think about is, and I want to get to some of our other topics, but if you look at where things may go, you know, and we may have other currencies that countries are acting with their currencies that may lend to this, but what are some of the things that people may want to look at if we do see this dollar rally turn and see the dollar then go back to a longer term trend of declining? Mm-hmm. What are some things that we should be thinking about categorically or from an asset allocation standpoint?
Well, I mean, there's several things. I mean, one, stocks in general tend to prosper, but particularly commodity-related stocks. So,
okay.
You know, gold miners, oil companies, natural gas companies, different things like that tend to do quite well. Gold itself, silver itself tend to do good. Major foreign currencies tend to do well in light of that. So if the dollar turns down, the euro tends to go up. Also, some of the commodity currencies could get a lift, so Australian dollar, Canadian dollar, et cetera.
Okay.
And keep in mind, like, some of these people that are our listeners here, you know, may not have foreign exchange accounts, but you know, they may have stock brokerage accounts. So there's corresponding exchange-traded funds that people can track these currencies with. So you can Google those and find a corresponding stock ticker symbol or ETF symbol that'll track these currencies. So you don't have to go to a bank and buy Australian dollars or euros or something like that.
No, yeah, right. Now, you want to do it in a more liquid, flexible, easier to purchase,
less
transaction cost, and instead of buying the Australian dollar at the airport.
right.
No, that's helpful. So there are some, because there is going to be, and you mentioned the several choices there that I think are definitely things for people to keep in mind as part of their portfolio. I always refer to it as kind of a well-balanced diet, you know, that mm-hmm. breakfast cereal alongside your eggs, bacon, and cereal or toast or whatever else you do, glass of orange juice on the table. You know, when you do this investing, you don't want to put it all in any one area. But you mentioned stocks because I think sometimes people kind of overlook that. They go to and they think about what you said, Sean, which is gold and commodities and things like that, the oil. But if you have a company with a lot of international exposure, a lot of international revenue, and wherever it may be, and then you see the dollar go through a declining period, as those earnings are translated from overseas operations to U.S. dollars, it's going to translate and give the parent U.S. parent company a lot more profitability.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, particularly the stuff that is most affected by the dollar, you know, like you say, your commodity related stocks, I would go to those before I would go to a futures contract or something like that, because you can hold a stock for as long as you want, and that stock may even pay a decent dividend yield as well. So, to me, that's my preferred way to go about that.
All right, no, that's good. And I did, while we were talking, I pulled up the 5-year chart on the euro versus the dollar, and it was just in that last 5-year period, the high point for the euro to the dollar was about $1.48, and we're in the $1.14 range now. So that's certainly been a significant decline. That was in April of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so we've seen quite the drop. All right, well let's grab another quick break and we'll come back with Sean Hyman. I want to get to his recent article about earning 6% a year, which would be very attractive, Sean, while taking advantage of oil's low price. So we'll shift our gears, get into a little bit more of a conversation about oil right after this break.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back. Sean Hyman on the line with us, trader and editor, Ultimate Wealth Report, website ultimatewealthreport.com. Good insights and an interesting article here recently, Sean, about the opportunity to try to make some good earnings while taking advantage of oil's low price. So are you referring to getting into some of these maybe beaten up or, you know, stocks that have been pulled back a little bit over in the oil sector with some decent dividends?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of times a high dividend yield can sometimes be a flag, you know, a red flag saying that a company's not doing well and it's not going to do well and they may have to cut their dividend. They may be you know, bleeding cash even. But in these instances, I found, you know, several stocks in the oil sector that are foreign oil companies but are household names like BP, which a lot of people might know better as British Petroleum or BP Amoco. Eni, which is a foreign oil company as well, and Total, and these are based out of France, UK, et cetera. So based out of major economies, they have a global presence all over the world. Their symbols are BP. The next one is E, and the next one is TOT. So BP, E, and TOT, and all those have roughly around about a 6% dividend yield or higher. And so typically I feel that when you go into something like this, you should, you know, not just pick one stock, you should pick, you know, several. And with your blended average dividend, you still end up with a high dividend, and yet you disperse your risk some. But for instance, a lot of people are, you know, not wanting to go into an oil company because they say, hey, well, oil may not have bottomed yet. I mean, oil might go from 40 to 30 or, you know, some are saying 40 to 25 or 40 to 20 or what have you. But the thing is not really to focus on, you know, have you called or have we seen the bottom. It's really, is oil at a unsustainably low level right now? In other words, if you say a year from now or 2 years from now, is oil still probably going to be in the 40s or 50s? And it's not very likely that that's going to happen. If that is your belief, then it's a prime time to start investing in oil stocks, because many times you'll find that the actual oil companies, these oil stocks, will start to rebound and go up even a little bit ahead of oil's rebound to start with. But the reason why I like these three is because they have a 6% dividend yield or higher as a blended average, and they're huge companies. Like BP is a $115 billion company that I think has been around since like the 1800s. And so it's been through a lot of inflationary periods, deflationary periods, all kinds of different regime changes, and just, I mean, you name it, you know, the Great Depression, all kinds of stuff. And this company earned like $32 billion last year. They've got like $31 billion of cash on their books and yet produce a 6.3% dividend yield. So that's, in my mind, a solid company. ENI is similar. You know, it's a $60 billion company, has, you know, $12 billion in cash and $24 billion made in profits last year. In Total, $114 billion company. And last year made about $33 billion and has over $25 billion in cash on their books. So we're talking about big, deep-pocketed companies, well-capitalized companies that have been around for a long time, that are oil industry leaders, and that have been beaten down because of such negative sentiment with the oil market, that now have such choice dividend yields and I believe are very sustainable because of how deep-pocketed these companies are. Well, now, if this was a 6% dividend yield and they had, you know, a handful of million dollars of cash on their books, I'd say, yeah, that dividend yield's going to go away, or possibly the company's going to go away. But that's simply not the case with these companies.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, is really the sustainability about these dividends. And if you've got the deeper pockets, or you've got some additional diversification of either vertical, horizontal integration of your distribution or other businesses, that they could be much more sustainable to weather the storm, if you will. And some of these stocks, like you said, Sean, like BP, for example, you know, if we go back and look at their five-year chart, I'm looking at back at about the fourth quarter of 07, their stock was as high as $73 a share, and now currently in the low 40s. So, you know, there's definitely a potential to return to glory, if you will. But in the meantime, maybe some potential to make some money on the dividend.
Yeah, absolutely. And if somebody really is a true investor and they can, you know, they're willing to you know, put the money in these stocks and wait, you know, a couple of years or so, and it may not take that long at all to produce nice profits. But if they're willing to go in with that mindset, I think they'll be very pleased that they did, because you'll earn, like I say, 6% a year. You're not going to get anywhere around that on your money in a savings account or CD or anything of that sort right now. Far from that. And again, you're dealing with, you know, big, just mammoth size companies with very deep pockets that have been doing this thing for a long time. And how they got to be such big companies is because they did have competent management that did know how to roll with the punches. So when there were recessions and depressions and inflation and deflation and all these, they knew how to adjust everything to survive, you know, more than plenty well through those periods and to go into higher heights throughout the year. So they're very competent. Even BP, there was some, you know, they made some adjustments. And there's some of these companies that have been capping salaries, cutting payrolls, shutting down unprofitable wells at the time. I mean, you know, they're tightening the belt, and they're doing what they need to do to make sure that they more than make it through these periods and come out on the other end shining.
Well, what do you make, and that's helpful, Sean, what do you make two other related stories or maybe areas we could talk about that I think listeners would appreciate is, how about the drillers, the offshore drillers? How do you think they'll fare here in the short, maybe, and then maybe in more of the mid and long term? And then I want to ask you about the frackers and what they're doing.
Well, I mean, I like Transocean, which symbol Rig, and I like Diamond Offshore, symbol DO. We own both of those in the Ultimate Wealth Report portfolio. And I like those because they have a huge dividend. They've been beaten down. They've been investors have basically miscalculated, you know, and that's what happens when an asset gets overly pummeled. So when something bad happens and the press pounds something for long enough, investors get in a very negative mindset about it, and so they get very irrational. And when they get irrational, they make dumb decisions. And so it makes them it causes these stocks to go to a state of undervaluation. In a perfect world, they would always stay at a state of a fair valuation or thereabouts, and you know, you would have an efficient market like some professors preach. But in a real world, that never happens because you have human emotion in there, and we misjudge it to the upside and the downside. So we misjudge it to the upside when everybody and their mama seems to want to buy something because they're touting it so much on TV and everybody's in a frenzy and they overvaluate a company, and then, you know, now we've got these oil companies, and they're undervalued, and again, they're deep-pocketed enough to make the turn. They're making the cuts and adjustments that they need to, and they'll come out of it just fine. But I like the drillers, the frackers. I mean, obviously they're getting hit right now with the game that Saudi Arabia is playing. Sure. Without cutting production, and they're hoping that, you know, some of these guys have to shut down, and then when everything comes back, that they own more market share and yet are still able to keep their high production levels.
Do you have any of those that you're following, Sean, that you might mention by name? Any that you like?
There's not any of the frackers that I'm invested in. I'm invested really in the biggest of the bunch, you know,
right.
those ones that I named out.
Right.
'Cause I guess when I go into a beaten down sector, I like to go with the biggest and the baddest.
I hear you. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so to me, I want to go in with the ones that have the biggest war chest, you know, the biggest amount of cash, the lowest amount of debt, et cetera, the best balance sheets that I can find, because, you know, statistically, your odds are going to be best going into those and spreading your money around a handful of those than you are the other. But, you know, they could shake out some of the smaller frackers, no doubt, that you know, were highly leveraged and had a high debt load and expected oil to stay around 80 or 100 a barrel, and you know, here we've gotten down into the 40s and 50s. That could happen, but I don't think any of the bigger players they're going to, you know, to really knock out there. But the biggest thing, I think one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of people make about the frackers is that, you know, they ramped up production so fast, and so they go, oh, man, we're topping Saudi Arabia right now, and we're the biggest oil giant and all this kind of stuff. But the thing is, those Saudi wells, those things don't tap out in a year or two or three, and
True.
These fracking wells do. And so that's one of our biggest problems that we've got right now. And so these wells tap out so quickly that probably, you know, 10 years from now, we probably still won't be able to say, hey, we're, you know, kicking Saudi Arabia's butt, you know, with oil production.
Well, that's fair. That's fair, because it is a different animal, and those Saudi Arabian wells seem to go right down to the center of the earth. They're
yep.
They're pretty deep, and they've got a lot of oil over there. But it is encouraging, I suppose, Sean, that, you know, that we do have not quite the reliance that we did on foreign oil and energy, and that we are making these advances. But there's still so much to be seen, and we may see some merging of some of these smaller oil production companies, especially with the frackers, just trying to better position themselves to weather the storm. And you know, it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
Absolutely.
Very good. Well, if you've just joined us, great interview with Sean Hyman, giving us some insight into not only the oil, but also Bitcoin and the dollar and lots of good stuff. You can go take a look at ultimatewealthreport.com, learn more about what Sean's doing, a trader and editor of The Wealth Report. Sean, always a pleasure to have you. We'll have you back on another topic, and keep up the trading and the research.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Glad to have you.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.